This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM in good old McLean County in Bloomington Normal, 88.3 in Pontiac, 97.1 in Lincoln, covering most of Central Illinois. We hope to have a great show for you today. I'm here with my wife, Lynn. We've been having some nice summer weather here in the fall, and that's been really great. And I guess we're going to still continue to have some nice weather, and it's going to cool off a little bit, but it looks pretty good. And it's nice and dry, and I think all of that is real nice in the fall, too, because all the crops are in, and not in, but all the crops are done. And I don't think we need a lot of rain right now. I'm sure the people down in Louisiana feel that way, that they don't need any more down there. So we should feel very, very lucky up here. They're not having as good a weather. Out west, they're having the fires. And I think down in the southeast, they've had a lot of rain. So we're getting our share of the nicer weather. And we certainly sometimes deserve that here in Central Illinois. But it's a good place to live when you think about a lot of the things that are going on in other places. And I like it here. I think most people really need to take a look around and see what we have. And we have a good place to live. But at any rate, we're brought to you by you. I want to remind everybody out there that if you can make a donation to our station, we would really appreciate it. And you can go to our website, and that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Again, that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. It will tell you a lot about us, and it will allow you to make a donation or perhaps something else that you can find on the website that would trigger you to do something else. Remember, again, this is October, and it's Respect Life Month, and we certainly need that right now. And again, I'm here with my wife, Lynn. If she has anything to say before we start, I'll go ahead and turn it over to her, Lynn.
Okay. I got three things to say, if I can remember the third one, you know. First of all, I love this weather. This is my kind of weather. We've stayed this way forever, as far as I'm concerned. And number two, Feast of Our Lady of the Rosary was this last week on the 7th. And that's when a lot of the rosary novenas ended. But there is on the Fatima, America Needs Fatima, they have extended to our election on November 3rd, and we're continuing to pray the rosary every day for this country on that site. So look it up. It's a beautiful rosary. It really helps you to meditate. But we've got to pray before this election. Who knows? We just got to trust that God will make everything well. That was the second thing. Third thing, this week, the feast of St. Callistus the First is this Wednesday. And St. Callistus' name comes up in the Eucharistic prayer, you know, where they name all the different saints. And I don't think a lot of people know who these saints are. But St. Callistus is one of them. You find his name there. He was a slave. Then he went from slave to pope and became a martyr. This was in around the year 217, very early church. But he accomplished a lot. And the biggest thing that he was opposed for was because his teaching was that the church could forgive even the worst of sinners. And you know how people are, well, geez, you're going to, Joe down the street's done everything you think of that's against life, but he shouldn't be able to repent. But Callistus said, no, he can. So that's the three things. Did you notice what I said?
Well,
that's okay.
Well, at any rate, our topic today, the topic that I would like to cover today and we're going to cover, is piety. And that relates a lot to probably what St. Callistus did, the fact that we have to humble ourselves sometime and at the same time extend empathy and sympathy and take into consideration the needs and the situations of others besides ourselves. And I think we're living in a world anymore that's very, very hard. And there's a lot of radical individualism and, you know, sort of self-love, you might say, and people who aren't looking at others and seeing a different side of things. And we need a lot more of that, as, you know, you were saying earlier. So I think the topic piety is apropos for our society and our current situation. And the questions we need to ask is, you know, what exactly does piety mean? And maybe what exactly does it mean for us? And what does piety mean for our country? And can we survive without it? And again, you know, exactly what is it? And because we're living in a hard world, there's a lot of hostility anymore to religion. It seems there's a lot of hostility to people of the past and people unwilling to put themselves in the shoes of people that lived in a different era than themselves and understand that what they did and how they behaved was a result of the times that they were in. And it's not, you know, to make snap judgments about what people did or didn't do in the past without further consideration for the situation and the times shows a lack of empathy and also a lack of piety. There's a lot of hostility to religion today. It seems like we take our freedom of religion in our society. There's the idea of freedom of religion. It seems anymore that people have translated that into freedom from religion, that somehow or another religion should be closed off and shut away so it doesn't interfere with and bother their radical individual lives. We seem to have a divided nation. There's a lot of secularity being put above religion. There's the abortions that are going on, millions every year, or thousands at least, aborted. There are babies being aborted in the process of being born. Our suicide rate is up. We have the pandemic going on. There's been constant rioting in some of our cities for the last 6 months or so. Again, there's this idea that there are no fixed absolutes or no fixed values. And the world has sort of change, especially our country, has sort of changed from the country that it was when I grew up and, you know, was a young man, and my wife also, a young lady. So these are some of the things that piety bears on, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. And the problem, of course, is the lack of piety and the misconception of piety. I think there's a modern misconception as to what piety is and how important it is. So I want to go through an article from the magazine First Things, which is, First Things Institute on Religion. And it's a mostly Catholic magazine. It incorporates a number of other religions, but it was started by Father John Niehaus. And it's a continuation of a project that he started, and of course he was Catholic. And there's an article in First Things in the November 2020 issue by a professor, James Hankins, and he's a professor of history at Harvard, and he writes an article, Pietas. And of course that's the idea of piety, Pietas. He starts the article quoting from a poem by W.H. Auden. In the deserts of the heart, let the healing fountain start. In the prison of his days, T. teach the free man how to praise. And the whole, the lines there sort of suggest that there can be a dryness in our hearts, the deserts of the hearts. And to heal our hearts, we need to have a healing fountain, and the healing fountain is piety. In the prison of his days, teach the free man how to praise. In other words, how to praise God, how to praise other people, how to praise nature itself for all of our gifts. And, this is what the poem is sort of driving at. And all of those things are a form of piety. And Professor Hankins starts the article, "The words piety and pious have an archaic ring. Moderns find them hard to use without irony or a sneer. Pejorative senses of the words predominate, such as those the Oxford English Dictionary gives for piety." And here's the definition that it gives. "Piety, a sanctimonious statement, a commonplace. And for pious, the definition is hypocritically virtuous, self-righteous, sanctimonious." That's the attitude our society has toward the word piety, pious, or pietas of this day. The words conjure in the worldly mind the image of superstitious old women kneeling before statues in church, clutching their rosaries and holy cards. Only readers of old literature are aware of the richer and nobler senses of the words in the pre-modern West. As Cicero wrote, "In all probability, the disappearance of piety toward the gods will entail the difference. This will entail the disappearance of loyalty and social union among men as well, and of justice itself, the queen of all virtues." Today, his predictions threaten to become a reality. And the ancient and older idea, and I shouldn't say it's not that ancient really, in Christianity, the old idea of piety seems to have been swept away by this modern idea that piety somehow is being overly sanctimonious. But it's not. In uncorrupt societies, children go up with a sense of gratitude for the unearned benefits they have received. If we have normal moral responses, we feel grateful for all the things we have been given that we have done nothing to deserve. The love and nurture of parents and family, the kindness of friends and benefactors, the benefits of a well-ordered society, which it seems we no longer have. The freedoms we enjoy, thanks to the sacrifice of our countrymen, the beauty and bounty of nature, which God pours down upon us every day. We have to admit, if we are honest, that we have done little to deserve what we have been given. We have indeed done many things that would justify our being stripped of what we have been given. If we have any decency, if we know what is descends, what is fitting, our only response can be gratitude and love for family and country and God. We have obligations we can never repay, and that fact imposes on us an obligation of loyalty to the sources of those benefits. The proper human response to all the unearned blessings we have received is pietas. That is the original, and that should be the current meaning of piety. It is not some kind of sanctimonious behavior practiced by old women clutching rosaries and holding on the holy cards in church. Pietas is the gratitude that we should be giving for all of the good things that have been given to us. We come into this world with nothing. Everything that we have is a gift. It's a gift of nature. It's a gift of God. But human beings decline all too easily into the shameful condition of ingratitude. We willfully forget what we owe to others and to God. And isn't that true, Lynn, that it's so easy to slip into that?
Oh, it is. It is. I think in the beginning of the article there, it mentioned maybe that, or you mentioned, people don't know what the word means anymore. I think that's very, very true. It never occurs to many of us to be grateful for even the smallest things. We've grown up and just don't have that virtue yet of giving thankfulness for what we have.
And I like that line from Auden, also, in the prison of his days, teach the free man how to praise. It almost seems a contradiction there. But the fact is what the suggestion is, and it's a truism too, is that without praising God, without praising the gifts, you know, the other people, and without praising our country and our society and our culture for all the things that have been given to us, we're not really free.
No.
We in the prison of his days, I think, is the radical individualism can actually lock us into a cage and make us slaves rather than free men. Being totally cut off from everybody and everything and unwilling to give the praise and gratitude that is necessary and to put ourselves in other people's shoes and be slow to judge and try to understand first. That is, you know, like the Indians would say, to, you know, walk in another man's moccasins. Unless we do that, we're not really free. We're slaves to our own selfishness. And I think that's what the lines of the poem mean. It seems contradictory that a person could be free and still in prison, but that's exactly what it means. In the prison of his days, teach the free man how to praise. And if we as a country forget that, we as a country will no longer be free. And I think that's what the article is driving at. So we'll go ahead and continue with it. At any rate, human beings decline all too easily into the shameful condition of ingratitude, as my wife mentioned. We willfully forget what we owe to others and to God. And willfully is, in other words, we want to forget because we have this idea that we want to be self-contained and totally individually free. And according to the lines of the poem, instead we make ourselves slaves. We like to take personal credit for what others have given us. In the moral language we have loss, this once was called vainglory, and it was regarded by decent people as a fault deserving ridicule. So we're going to go ahead and stop at this point and stay with us. We'll come back and talk more about this article. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Here's an easy way to donate to Catholic Spirit Radio. As an Amazon shopper, you can donate 0.5% of your purchase cost to Catholic Spirit Radio, also known as 2820 Communications. Before making a purchase, you will always need to log into smile.amazon.com, search and select 2820 Communications, or choose this charity under account settings. Thank you for supporting Catholic Spirit Radio through 2820 Communications with your Amazon Smile purchase.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're back from our break. We're talking about the virtue of piety, what it really means, and what it used to mean, and what it should mean in our day. And we're talking about the fact that people and countries that ignore piety make themselves slaves to their own selfishness and individualism and cut themselves off from the society and the country in which they live. And so this is an important issue. And I'm reading from an article by James Hankins. And it's in First Things, a magazine put out by the Religious Institute. And he's a professor at Harvard. And we're reading from that article. It says here, our cities display, or used to display, statues of our great leaders to remind us of what we owe them and to encourage us to similar virtue. Pietas is cultivated, or used to be cultivated, in civil religion. And notice that, civil religion. In other words, countries and states used to understand that it was necessary to have a carryover religion into the civic doings of the country itself, and that it was important for authorities and officials to take charge of that and see to it that this was done. And it says here, public prayers, oaths, the Pledge of Allegiance, sacred symbols on our coinage and inscriptions, buildings such as the National Cathedral in Washington, all of these are results of civil religion, that is, bringing religion into the public square and making it important, and making it important to understand, and how important it is to understand our past, to praise the people who made it possible for us to be where we are and do what we are doing, and the praise for the people around us, for the good order of society, and all of the things that we are given that we come into the world without, and which are a product of other people's efforts. And without that praise and understanding, a country and a person will not remain free. When these kind of rights are observed, those below, that is the people who are below the authorities, are compliant with the laws, with the good laws of the country. Those above are enlightened. The people and rulers who are in charge of things are enlightened themselves. Myriad things change, but they do not become chaotic. And take a look at our country today. There is an awful lot of chaos. Not only chaos in what we see in some of the riots and disturbances that are going on, but there's a lot of personal chaos. People's lives are chaotic. People don't know what their purposes are. There are a lot of suicides. It seems to be on the rise with young people. And a lot of this happens when there is no understanding of a real purpose to life. And that comes from a lack of piety. One who turns his back on these kind of rights will be lost. Since the late 17th century, the idea has grown in the West that the state should tolerate impiety, especially toward God, in the interest of freedom of thought. Such an attitude was hardly conceivable in earlier times. And this is, you know, this idea that we have, that somehow we should be not have freedom of religion, but freedom from religion. And that we have somehow created a secular society, that we can have a neutral state. But I've said it before and I'll say it again, that's not possible. Man is inherently religious and he will practice some kind of religion, and without piety it will be a hard, cruel religion, and we're seeing a lot of that now. And again, in earlier times, it was considered obvious that piety must be upheld by the state. In the 10th book of his laws, the most profound discussion of piety in ancient Greek philosophy, Plato argued that the state must protect piety in its laws. Plato held that a good society should root out impiety in two ways. One, by philosophical argument, we should have good philosophy, and of course, there has been a decline in the state of our philosophy ever since the 18th century. If the wise men of the city do not make a public case in favor of the divine, materialism in both its ontological and moral forms will win out. In other words, if we don't make a public case in favor of God, then materialism, in both relation to our being in relation to our morals will win out. If the people become materialists, they will come to believe that the laws are not rooted in nature, but are man-made. And isn't that the case? It hasn't been that long ago when our philosophers in this country and our law became what they call positive law, that all our law is simply man-made and man-centered. This sends public opinion down a slippery slope that ends in the belief expressed by Thrasymachus in the Republic that laws encode simply the will of the stronger. And again, that translates into the consent of the people, that is public opinion. Our laws are simply an expression of the consent of the people, of public opinion, or more bluntly, our laws are simply made by the mob, that somehow or another might is right. That's what happens when we deviate publicly from the divine.
The popes in the past have, and recently too, warned some. So they have really tried to warn people about this happening, the secular materialism world. They've tried to. To what avail? What have we got to look at? It's there, but it's not widespread.
That's exactly what's happened. We've been warned by that. Pope Pius warned. Leo XIII has warned about it.
Pius the Ninth.
And Pius the Ninth. Modernism leads to this idea.
That the
consent of the people is all that we need. That the man himself makes his own laws, and laws are posited by people, and that's all we need. Against this view in the laws, Plato presents the first arguments in Western philosophy for the existence of God in the abstract Greek sense, meaning what is perfect, unchanging, eternal, and therefore divine. In other words, you know, that which contains everything and from which everything draws its being. You know, so something which contains everything and is totally self-contained and is a primary first cause, that would be God. And that would be perfect because that which contains everything lacks nothing. And since defects are always a lack of something, something which lacks nothing is perfect. And this is what Plato was talking about. And when we forget that, when we forget praise for the divine and the necessity to worship the divine, we lose piety, and when we lose piety, we make ourselves slaves, and we become blinded, self-contained, and hard. Goes on here, he says, Plato also proposes laws to punish those who do not accept the philosophical beliefs that support piety. That's how far Plato goes. That's how important the ancients felt that piety was to a state or a country, that it couldn't exist without it. And so, therefore, in order to protect the existence of the country itself, it was necessary to support piety and punish people who acted against it. Citizens who express impious beliefs should be first admonished, Plato said. Then they should be tried. And if found guilty, they should be punished. Though we may rightly reject his dire methods to protect piety, we are very foolish to ignore his insights into the perils of impiety. It erodes social bonds and undermines the authority of the law. And take a look around us, what's happening. The authority of the law is being undermined. We're having this idea of defunding our police. We're having this idea of not enforcing the law. We're having this idea of letting people who break the law repeatedly, having them let go. We're having this idea of no longer requiring bail. We are becoming a lawless society, and we are becoming that kind of society because we become so individualistic in our outlook that we can't see the good of the whole. And in doing that, we also become slaves to our own selfishness. Christianity offered a challenge to the way the ancients ranked their pious obligations. Christianity teaches that devotion to God is not genuine unless it fundamentally reorders our affections. Jesus put this in typically provocative form, saying, "If any man can come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple." That sounds pretty tough, doesn't it? We just were talking about Plato saying that there should be laws on the books punishing people who are not, you know, who practice impiety and who don't conform to the piety necessary to support a country, that these people should be punished. We were saying that that seems to be sort of dire to our modern ideas, you know, Plato advocating that. But take a look what Jesus Christ himself said. Again, he said, "If any man comes to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple." So what does that mean? It means Christ is not saying that obeying God entails hating our family or failing in our duties to them. He is stating in the most dramatic way possible, simply as Plato was trying to say, that our paramount duty is to obey the call of holiness. That is our paramount duty as a individual and also as a citizen and as a country, is to obey the call of holiness. The supreme impiety is to reject the voice of God, and the performance of other pious duties cannot be an excuse. In other words, that has to come first, or other pious duties will not get done. So what he's saying here is that unless we put God first, unless we put our love for God first, we will not love our fellow man, we will not love our country, we will not do those things necessary to have a good and orderly society, good families, or a good country. He's saying that this is so important that we will not be treating our fellow citizens, our wives, our fathers, and our mothers with the respect they deserve unless we first give that respect to God. So that's what he meant when he said, unless you hate. In other words, you have to put God first. And he used the words that he did in order to make it stand out. So he's not saying that we really hate our mothers. He's saying brothers and sisters and so forth. He's saying if we don't put God first and put piety in front, then those other things will not happen, is what he's saying.
It's a good point.
For St. Thomas, who had defied his own family's wishes in order to become a Dominican friar, this was no abstract doctrine. St. Thomas actually had to oppose his family in order to become a Dominican friar. They didn't want him to lead a religious life. You know, his father, I think, had a business and so forth, and they wanted St. Thomas to, you know, be involved in that and be more worldly, and they didn't want him off in some monastery and so forth. They did everything to discourage it. They even locked him up and thought maybe if they kept him locked up for a while, you know, these ideas would fall away. So he had to actually defy his whole family in order to follow God. So this was not abstract for St. Thomas. In the long run, of course, he did the right thing, and his family was much, much better off for it. In effect, in a way, by putting God first and seeming as if maybe he was hating his family, he actually ended up putting his family first. So,
yeah, it's happened with a lot, several saints.
Exactly.
Look at St. Francis of Assisi. His father chained him up in their house in a basement, like, and wouldn't let him out because he thought he went crazy.
Exactly. And by defying, he actually, you know, contributed not only to his family but to his society. It says, Augustine spends much of City of God, explaining to his Roman readers that their vaunted pietas is disordered, and therefore vice masquerading as virtue. True piety is the worship of God. And the old Romans had worshiped false gods. There was the problem. They were trying to practice piety, but you can't do it by worshiping false gods. Their storied willingness to put the good of the republic ahead of their private advantage was not the reason for the success of the Roman Empire. It was God who had allowed Rome to triumph for reasons hidden in his providence. And so they had things backwards. By putting a false god first, they were actually bringing their empire down. And so we need to get rid of false gods. And one of the worst false gods, of course, is self. In worshiping man instead of God, and believing in material only instead of both spirit and material, and believing in the things of the earth and not of the things of the heavens. So the most important thing is to have a proper order in one's loves, an ordo caritatis established in us by God's grace. Again, God must come first, and we need grace. He is the only eternal object of our love, and once the love of God reigns in our hearts, our other duties and affections toward family, friends, and country assume their proper proportion. So again, without piety, without pietas, none of these other things will result. For example, knowledge is useless without piety, since the goods, the bona, known through knowledge, are neglected without it. At any rate, we're going to go stop here and take a break, and we'll come back and finish up talking about piety, pietas, and why it is so important for a country and a nation, and one of the major things that we are lacking today. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Here's an easy way to donate to Catholic Spirit Radio. As an Amazon shopper, you can donate 0.5% of your purchase costs to Catholic Spirit Radio, also known as 2820 Communications. Before making a purchase, you will always need to log into smile.amazon.com, search and select 2820 Communications, or choose this charity under account settings. Thank you for supporting Catholic Spirit Radio through 2820 Communications with your Amazon Smile purchase.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're back from our break, and we're talking about piety and why and how a country needs it so much. We're reading from an article by James Hankins, a professor of history at Harvard. And he's talking about the importance of why a country needs piety, and how important it is to the existence and well-being of not only individual human beings, but a country itself, and the fact that the authorities should be doing everything that they can to promote it. And in a lot of instances, as both Plato and Jesus Christ also calls for, is to, in effect, in a way, call attention to punishment that happens when piety is neglected. And the article goes on and says, statesmen and magistrates should uphold three civil duties of pietas. One, to maintain divine worship and ceremonies. In other words, a country should not have a naked public square that is somehow or another a public square devoid of religion. They should not have this so-called separation of church and state. It needs a civil religious order. So it should uphold these duties. One, to uphold, maintain divine worship. And also ceremonies. All those ceremonies are important for people to see and for children to learn as they grow up. And number two, to encourage a sense of obligation. People should understand that they don't come into this world by themselves. They come into this world obligated to many who came before. That everything that they have is a gift. That nature itself is a gift. And they should be understand that they have an obligation to repay what has been given to them. They have an obligation to their country under God and to show zeal and gratitude, not only to parents, children, and spouses, but also to our fellow citizens. So they have an obligation. They have a duty to worship. They have an obligation to others, and they have a duty to show gratitude. Those are the three things they need to do, and that is worship, obligation, and gratitude. Not only to our parents, our children, and spouses, but also to our fellow citizens, whom we should treat with wondrous goodwill. Without piety, which Lactantius defined as notio dei, that is, intimacy with God, we lose our humanity. We sink to the level of mere animals. God's goodness to us requires us to be humane to others. And this fundamental humanity and care for our neighbors is what binds communities together and builds trust and a sense of common purpose. All states, whatever religion they embrace, have an obligation to punish the impious and sacrilegious. Kings and princes who preserve piety and religion will have greater rewards in the afterlife. Impious rulers would receive at last the full weight of God's punishment. So the article is talking about what happens to countries or people who do not practice piety is that punishment falls upon them. And take a look at what's happening in our country and to our country right now. And I think a lot of it is exactly what this article says. Failing to be grateful, judging as if somehow or another we are perfect or sitting in some kind of judgment seat. Condemning people in the past for not living up to the kind of standards that we invent for them today, and of course seldom live up to those standards ourselves. Ours is a different time and place. Our inheritance encourages tolerance and guards against state-imposed orthodoxies. But I would sort of take issue with that last part of that sentence. Our society used to guard against state-imposed orthodoxies, but it seems when we lose our piety, we actually have more state orthodoxies being imposed upon us. There is a lot of various things and ideas about race and everything else imposed upon us today by people who feel that they are somehow or another more sanctimonious than everybody else. It seems as if it's not piety that makes people feel sanctimonious. It's self-love that makes people feel sanctimonious.
Pride is one of the biggest obstacles in life, our own pride, man's pride. And pride is just the opposite of piety.
Exactly. We are wrong to imagine that the liberal qualities are based solely in modern political theories and concept of natural rights. The fuller humanity that flows from pietas is why we respect the buildings and works of art created by the devotion of our fellow human beings. And notice that, respect the buildings, and look at what's going on in our country. Buildings being torn down, works of art, statues of other times, statues of heroes being torn down, all because people somehow or another are sitting in this self-love judgment seat, thinking that they are better and higher and more noble and good than everybody else, many of who have accomplished absolutely nothing and know nothing about the conditions and times that other people in the past have worked in and have no respect for what has been given to them.
Lack of knowledge of history.
Exactly.
What do you suppose a man would build if he were left all onto his own and his own pride? What would it be?
Probably something like Narcissus, a statue of himself, like Narcissus saw when he fell in love with himself by seeing his image in the well.
But man doesn't do that. He builds things higher, in, like the Tower of Babel. I'm going to reach the heights and I'm going to have it. Tallest, the biggest, and everything. And what happens?
It comes crashing down.
With a big thump.
Right. Christian faith perfects the natural virtue of piety. And isn't that what Aquinas said, that grace perfects nature? In other words, God's grace starts with nature. It doesn't condemn nature. It doesn't abandon nature. It takes nature into consideration and then perfects it even more. And that's what we need, is God's grace, and we get that from being grateful and understanding that we have to give thanks to God for what's been given to us. And in doing that, we actually free ourselves to be better people. It should lead us to acknowledge and honor the beauty, truth, and goodness we find in other ages and other cultures, not deride or destroy them. And that's exactly what we're doing today, deriding other ages and other cultures, in destroying the products of other ages and other cultures, because somehow or another we feel that we are the epitome of, you know, God.
We're going to stand out because we're better.
We're better than everybody else, and failing to understand exactly the situations that these people lived in, and failing to consider all of the great things and good things, not just the negative things, but the great things and good things that were passed on down to us. It is worth asking what has happened in our country to dry up the natural springs of piety. Why is it that so many highly educated persons in positions of influence today fail to repudiate unjust accusations leveled against America by a passionate and ignorant mob? In other words, we should be standing up to this mob who thinks it's better than everybody else and better than us and better than everyone in the past. How can we explain why so few political leaders are willing to defend our country when shameful calumnies are hurled at our greatest statesmen and our most venerable institutions? Why are so many of our leading cultural and educational institutions now bent on requiring impiety of their members, forcing them to renounce their loyalty to America's past in a manner all too reminiscent of Mao Zedong's Cultural Revolution? Perhaps the simplest answer is that we have become small, narrow, and parochial, as the vainglorious who imagine themselves oracles of progress invariably become. And when people are vainglorious, when they abandon piety and they look upon themselves as being higher, better, and purer than everybody else, they degenerate. In other words, when they think that they only are the oracles of progress, they degenerate into these impious, vain people. People who live at the bottom of a well will think that heaven is small. Western culture now lies at the bottom of a very deep well. We need to climb out of that well that we have dug. Escape from the cave of falsehood and delusion, and we need to see the stars again. We should begin by recovering a proper patriotic disposition and encourage it in the young. And this is what our statesmen need to be doing on all sides. The utopian revolutionary will serve his country only on condition that it moves toward his idea of justice and equality. He may even fight on the side of another country if his own resists his preferred future. The liberal individualist loves his country the way he loves his country club, only on the condition that it enables him to satisfy his desires. And I think likewise the same thing with the church. We find a lot of people abandoning the church today because it has defects, and often there are people in it who are shameful people and do shameful things. And so we quickly abandon it. But the true pious person who looks at all that the church has handed on over a period of 2,000 years, doesn't do that. He understands that a lot of warts come with the good things as well, and he does what he can to try to alleviate those conditions. In other words, if his church or his country does not satisfy desires, the ungrateful person is happy to move on to another club or another country or another church that suits him better. Raised to think critically, he can find no reason to be grateful. And this is what we have with this constant emphasis in our schools on the idea we must be critical thinkers. The idea of critical thinking, it seems, is really, the word is a substitute for selfish thinking, for criticizing everybody else, for running everything else down. Critical should mean to try and understand. A true critic tries to praise as well as to find fault. True critic tries to improve, not just to tear down. But critical thinking seems the substitute. Critical thinking has seems to come to have, you know, seems to mean anymore. It's come to mean anymore tearing things down. That you're somehow a critical thinker if you tear everything down, and criticism becomes some kind of a weapon to beat other people over the head with. As a globalist, the critical thinker has no ancestors, no founding fathers, just himself. In the men who ventured their lives to found his country, he can see only slaveholders. Bereft of piety, he lacks humanitas. Those who can cancel the past with such cavalier attitudes and moral self-congratulation will go on to cancel their neighbors should they fail to live up to the latest ideological trends. Isn't that true? In other words, if all you can do is tear down, it doesn't take long before you'll start attacking the people next to you. Mm-hmm. How to climb out of the deep well in which we have placed ourselves is a question with no easy answer. One clear imperative is that our government must no longer adopt a pose of indifference to the many things of value we have inherited from our forebears. In other words, our government, on both sides, all authorities and statesmen need to quit worrying about just getting elected. That isn't the only thing in life. And start handing on and passing on some of the necessary virtues to the young and to the citizens themselves and reinstitute piety. And we have to get rid of this idea that religion is to be chased out of the public square. People are to be simply self-contained, and that they should have some kind of protection from an idea that bothers them and that they don't like. It must celebrate the things inherited from our forebears. It must protect them and reward those who embody our best traditions. And inculcating piety requires support for the family, support for civil society, and support for sound religion. The state needs to support sound and functional religion, and the sound and functional religion that built Western civilization and our society has been Christianity, and especially Catholic Christianity. And it seems that in this hostility toward religion, hostility toward Christianity, and especially Catholic Christianity, leads the way. They are the best allies, these things, of patriotism, deepening our capacity for civic gratitude and ensuring that it is placed within a proper order of love. Toppled statues, an educational culture bent on repudiation of the past, media awash with anti-American propaganda, and more are bringing one truth hideously into view. The old authors, such as Plato and others, were right. And Jesus Christ, of course, were right when they said that a country without pietists will soon disintegrate. Only by recovering that forgotten virtue can we hope to rebuild the edifice of love and loyalty that shelters our common life. And that's the end of the article, and I think we should take the last words of that article very, very seriously. A country without piety is a country that is endangering itself and putting itself in harm's way.
We need to keep in mind that all creation, all that's been created and put here for us, is waiting for the redemption of man.
At any rate, I hope that is something that people will consider. I think no country can get along without it, and this idea of chasing religion out of the public square is impossible, and a dysfunctional and harsh and cruel religion will replace it, and that is exactly what's happening today, and we need to return to praising wherever we can, and holding up the virtues and understanding that we have been given much, and most of it has been given to us without our deserving it. And when it's stripped away, then it's, you know, you don't know what you have until it's gone. So with
so
that,
the song says, we take paradise.
With that,
up a parking lot.
Exactly. With that, we'll end the program and say our prayer. St. Michael the Archangel,
defend us in battle.
Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him. We humbly pray.
And do thou, Prince of the heavenly host,
by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all evil spirits who wander through the world for the ruin of souls. Amen.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN to Central Illinois 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at catholicspiritradio.com. Or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.